I always feel like it's so strange to be alive. The feeling of being alive and the experience of living every day and just going about our daily lives, and also like the chaos that ensues in this world. I think it's sort of this overarching idea that I'm trying to kind of create these worlds in the painting where the figures are just a bit like dizzying and disoriented and looking at you, because it's like, that's how I feel.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.
Today's guest is the Canadian painter Erin Armstrong. Welcome, Erin.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Erin, what I'm always very interested in is, how did you get into art?
So I got into art very young. My mom is actually a painter. And when I was growing up, I like hated going to school. And so I used to always pretend that I was sick with strep throat. And I would say, like, I can't go to school again today, because I wanted to stay home and go to my mom's studio. So I kind of was a feral child growing up and would just paint with her all day. And so that's kind of like when I started from a very young age, and she kind of taught me how to paint. And then, you know, as I got older and I got into high school and stuff, I did go to school, and I was, you know, in all the art classes and everything. And I really wanted to go to university for art, but, you know, around that time, school counselor told me, you know, there's no future in fine arts, like, don't go, because I had gotten into all the fine art programs in Canada and the universities. And she's like, just go get a Bachelor of Arts. That'll be a much safer degree. So I ended up going to university for 4 years for history. And when I graduated, I was like, you know, this is really not what I want to do. So I started painting again and realized, you know, this is really what I love. And I entered just like a local art fair in Toronto, probably when I was like 21 or 22. And I'd never shown my work publicly ever. And then that night, like, hundreds and hundreds of people came to the fair. And I sold out my whole booth the first night. And then a gallery from New York contacted me the next Monday and was like, will you come down and show your work in Soho? And I felt like, it felt so surreal.
So it was like an artist fair where artists can show their work.
Yeah. It was for a lot of like the emerging, like in Canada, there's University OCAD, which is like the big art university in Toronto. So a lot of like the OCAD grad students were there. Like, mainly it was artists who, you know, were young and had just graduated from a formal program. And yeah, I think I was just like, in this case, it's like ignorance is bliss. I had no idea what I was getting into. I didn't realize, I think if I knew all the people that were showing there and how talented they were and everything, I probably would have been scared off. But I kind of just was like, you know,
in
what?
In this safe exhibiting artist fair, you mean?
Yeah, in the fair. Yeah.
Funny how you put it, because I'm sure other people would also say, oh, that's something you don't do. You know, all these stupid unwritten rules of what to do, what not to do. But let's get back to, so born and raised in Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your mother was a professional artist, or is a professional artist?
She is. Yeah. She's an amazing painter, but she has this, my sister and I are always, you know, on her case, because our whole life she'll make these like amazing paintings. And then right when they're about to be done, she'll be like, no, something's not right about it. And then she'll throw the painting out. Mm-hmm. But like, I've posted some of her work. I've done like gone to her studio and posted it on my Instagram. And I've had galleries message me being like, how do we contact your mom? Or people, like collectors being like, oh, does your mom have a website? I'd like to buy her work. So she just turned 70. And my sister and I are, you know, really like saying age doesn't matter. Like, you need to just go for it. Because there's people like Catherine Bradford, or, you know, all these women who are like in their 80s now and just sort of having their moment. So I'm trying to convince her to.
So, but she made a living as an artist and was like all her life working as a professional, like selling, having.
No, she was always painting, but she worked in art direction in TV. Mm-hmm. And she just never showed her paintings. So she just like does it for herself.
Okay. Probably all painters do, no?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so, but now I understand. So she was doing a other job and painting.
Yeah.
Yes.
So she was working as an art director in TV, but she had a studio at my house. So like growing up, she would always be painting, and I would just go in and like draw on paper on the floor and just like hang out with her in there.
Yeah. Interesting, because your sister, she's a director, right?
Yeah, my sister's in film.
So both very visual.
Yeah, my mom, my sister, and I are all very creative. My dad was a lawyer, but he was very into photography. So
creative lawyer.
he tried copyright. He wanted to fit in. So. Yeah.
Interesting, but she did not pursue it on a way to doing exhibitions, finding a gallery, things like this.
Yeah, I think that it's like a lot of artists, I think they get, you know, maybe just like stage fright or nerves. It's like nothing's ever good enough. Like, even though, you know, my sister and I will tell her, your work is amazing, like just finish it, the painting's done there. She'll always be like, you know, I need just a couple more days to resolve it and then it'll be done. But I think that, you know, in art, it's like when I see one of my paintings, there's always something else I could tweak or, you know, maybe do this or that too. But I think like there comes a point where I just look at a painting and I'm like, no, like stop here. And then you just have to accept like I'm putting it out into the world and, you know, let's move on to the next.
Sure. And there's a shipping deadline too, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially at this point in my life, it's just like, I don't even have the time. It's like the galleries are saying, you know, where's the paintings?
Exactly,
the
ship.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Sometimes you need like maybe like a corrective to let go of something and maybe be not 100% convinced. But I see that a lot with painters who are more established, not necessarily even if the market is high or low, they more and more tend to stick on the work longer, have them hang around in the studio. You know, they have this safe sensor protocol to not finish a painting for the art fair or for the exhibition, but put in like a, I don't know, 6 months grace period where the painting needs to stay to have that time period to be, like Anselm Kiefer, for example, he does that.
Yeah.
He showed me the studio and said he keeps paintings, I forgot, minimum a year or something like this before he releases them, yeah. But tell me then, the name of your mother is also Armstrong?
No, her name's Virginia Kelly.
Virginia Kelly.
Yeah.
Okay, also out from Toronto.
Yes.
Yeah. So to see online, probably.
No, she's got no online presence.
No, you can't Google it.
She's a ghost.
Okay, only on your Instagram.
Yeah, I'll make her. I'll force her to have a website.
And she paints figurative as well?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Figurative. Yeah. So, you know, the good thing about the relationship with my mom that I'm sure is kind of unique to me, though, is that I'll be in the studio working on a show and I text her pictures like every day when I'm working on a painting, and I always message her for feedback because I like genuinely think that she's a really good artist. And so, I mean, it's probably pretty rare as a painter to have a mom that you can text, and then she'll, you know, she'll give me feedback, and I always actually like really respect it. And she always has like good ideas, and you know, she thinks like an artist, like she thinks in terms of like space and color and form. So she actually is like a big part of when I'm making a show, I send it to her and she'll say, you know, like, I think this is a bit too timid, or like, maybe you need to go stronger here, or like balance this out. So we talk a lot. And then, you know, sometimes when I'm really under the gun for an exhibition, I have brought her into the studio and I make her my intern and I make her paint backgrounds. Like if it's just a big solid color, I'll make her.
Cool.
Yeah.
Work That's for great. Me. You think you also you became a painter to sort of live up to her and to get her attention?
I don't think like to get her attention. I think I just like I honestly would be so bad at any other job. I think I just always knew that I wanted to be an artist. Like even when I was a little kid, that's just what I thought. I was like, I'm just going to be a painter. Like that's what I want to be. And then when I got older, I realized, oh, that's, you know, not the easiest career field to go into, even though it really is more of just like a lifestyle. Like I never feel like I'm working ever. I kind of just feel like I won the lottery and I just get to like paint by myself for months on end and I really enjoy it. But I think definitely like growing up with my mom as an artist, and then in my house, like my parents were really into design and art. So like our house was really like crazy wonky. Like we always had art hanging on the walls and the house was really like unique. And so I think I just grew up with creative parents and I was surrounded by that. And like when we would go on a trip growing up, we would always go to art museums. Like it just was always something I did and enjoyed. So I think it just sort of was in me from a very young age. And like my whole family on my mom's side, they're all writers or painters. And so I think coming from a background where everyone's like quite creative, it just sort of made sense to me.
Now, because why I was running, you know, my father passed away last year, and then my brother and I, we're both art dealers and work in the same field, even though he was never commercial. And then you wonder also if that's what motivates you is, you know, to take the same path, because we all seek for, I don't know, like attention or to compliments, but, you know, being noticed or something like this. And that was always the case that you and your mother had a, it was like a fruitful base of your relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, I'm sure that there's some like Freudian thing in there where we're all trying to, you know, have our parents proud of us or some type of attention or something. But I've never thought of it in that way, but I'm sure, you know, subconsciously there's something there. But yeah, my mom and I have always been close. And growing up, yeah, I just wanted to be home and painting. That's why I was always faking sick so I didn't have to go to school. Like I literally was failing math because I couldn't count, because I was like, no, I got to be at home with my pencil crayons and my mom. So, I mean, since I was young, yeah, we were quite close. And then, yeah, now that I'm an adult and...
You live close?
Yeah, we live close.
And your studio is where you live or separate?
No, separate. Yeah, okay. I have a loft. It's about just like 10 minutes from my house in Toronto.
And no competition when people ask you for her contact?
No, I want her to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. Because that was the case with my, at some point, you know, older artist who knew my father from the 60s, 70s reached out to him to get my contact.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he was very amused by this, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, so you went to actually more the influence of someone else here at the school giving you advice to that art is not something you can seek for professional life?
You know, when we were in grade 12, like our final year in high school, we all had, they made everyone meet with a guidance counselor because you had to tell them, you know, what school you were going to pick and whatever. And so I went in for a meeting and I was really excited because I had gotten into OCAD and Queens and Concordia, like all the big art, fine art programs I got early acceptance into, and I was going to go. And I went in and to this office and this woman, you know, she said, where are you going to accept? And I said, I think I'm going to accept OCAD. And she was like, what? For fine arts? And I said, yeah, like I want to go for the fine art program, the studio program painting. And she's like, what on earth would you do with that? And she was so, you know, blown away that I really thought, you know, she was saying it's such an archaic profession, you know, you're never going to succeed in that. And she's like, you really should just go get your BA, your Bachelor of Arts. And at that period in my life, like my parents were in the middle of divorce and it was just like, no one was really around at that time to guide me. I've always been younger, like a year younger. I started school earlier. So I was 16 or something, I think.
Oh, wow.
And
young.
So I was trying to figure out like the rest of my life. I was like, okay, so what do I do? And I think because she was so intense about, you know, you're basically going to fail and become a starving artist and don't do this, you're an idiot. So I kind of was like, oh, okay. So I ended up accepting a BA program in history, not even art history, just literally like Genghis Khan, World War II.
How are you going to make a secure living off that?
Yeah, I know, exactly. I was like, oh, I'm going to become like a professor. I mean, it made no sense. So, I mean, and I think I only chose history because I've always been interested in, I think, you know, I mean, so much of art also is informed by history and everything that's happened in the world is informed today by what's happened. So I benefited from taking it and I enjoyed the subject matter, but I'm like, what is this ever going to lead to job wise? So yeah, when I graduated, I think I felt so discouraged because I was like, wow, 4 years is a long time to do something you're not really passionate about. And so when I graduated, I was like, okay, I'm going to try and do, you know, some creative things. So I worked at a fashion magazine. I worked at an advertising agency.
Parallel to college.
Yeah, this is after university.
So you finished the...
I finished the degree,
okay, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And I, you know, in my head, I thought, oh, I'll try the things that are, you know, more classically, either they're creative, like fashion or, you know, advertising, but they're, you know, you could still make a living. And I think I just was always honestly, like, they never really felt right for me.
And you were not painting at that time?
I started to paint. Mm-hmm. Again, I hadn't painted for 4 years when I was at university. I had this like blackout period where I just went 4 years. Like my university roommates to this day, they're like, we didn't even know you were into art. Like, where did this come from? Because I think I went into this really like strange period where, yeah, I just didn't paint at all. And anyway, so when I graduated, I think I felt like, what the hell just happened the past 4 years? So in that time, I started painting again. And then, yeah, I think I thought kind of like, life is so short. Like, why am I doing something I don't feel passionate about? And like, I'm just going to at least give it a shot because I'll be so upset with myself if I didn't at least try to at least have like one exhibition and see how people reacted to my work. So I think that's why, you know, when I was 21 or whatever, and I put my work in that fair, I was like, this is, you know.
But it almost sounds like as if you were like trying to get off some drug or so, you know, like cold turkey period to be staying away from it.
Yeah, it was very, I felt very not myself those years. I felt it was, yeah, it was a weird period, but I think it forced me to realize like really what does make me happy and what I am passionate about. When I got out of there, it was like a time warp of like, it was just 4 years gone. And then I left and I was like, no, I can't do this anymore. I need to actually, you know, do what I'm passionate about. And thankfully, you know, that one fair, like.
But the time between this and the fairs, how did you come to your language? Like, you're painting figurative works with a certain, I mean, maybe that's also an influence from history, like a certain narrative? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I get actually a lot of like young artists message me and they say, how did you figure out your style? Or like, can you help me? I don't know what to paint. And it really is just like, a trial, like you just have to start painting. I always knew like I was more drawn to figurative work, like artists, you know, that I really liked. I think I liked figurative work because it felt most of like the story that I felt I was living, I could like see it within other work. But I like how in figurative work you can, you know, there's no rules, there's no rules in art at all, but in figurative work I could manipulate the environment, so it could more so be like a feeling of the way it feels kind of to be alive and what I was experiencing, rather than like I'm doing, you know, like hyper realist just portraits, you know, looking exactly like today's world. I wanted to do kind of like wonky worlds and have a figure in them, but almost as like a placeholder. So I never really paint literal people that I know. It's just sort of like from imagination based on like the way I'm feeling. So I think when I started, I was just really just, I don't know, I just began. Like I didn't really think twice. Like I never thought, oh, should I be an abstract painter or a figurative? It just kind of like came naturally to me. And then, you know, I've made tons of bad work. And but it's kind of that thing where it's like, you just need to keep making work, and then you just one day have like a day where something, everything clicks. And I've had days where I've made like three paintings that I thought were really strong paintings, and that was after like 3 weeks of making just shit. So it kind of just was like starting out when I first started painting as an adult, it was just kind of trial and error. And I just kind of like, you learn techniques as you go, just like, you know, happy accidents. And yeah, so that was, you know, over a decade ago. So the work just has evolved since then a little bit. Like, hopefully the work is a bit better than what I was making in my early 20s. But the overall kind of like ideas and feeling of the work kind of has stayed similar.
So when we look at this exhibition, I'll Try by Fire, there's like a series of figurative paintings of women, either in the whole figure or a series of portraits. And if we look at the portraits, they all, or most of them, have a flower in their mouth. So they remain silent somehow with a rose, is it, right?
Yeah, well, I was thinking, I mean, for the really like cropped in portraits this show, I was thinking about, I wanted to take something that was like super classically feminine, so like a flower, and kind of have it like shoved in their mouths. Historically, I think like women, flowers, like, you know, it has just been, you know, very tied together. So I was thinking in those instances, I wanted to push something in their mouth, and the flowers are kind of like wilting and they're like flopped over. And then I put thorns on the flowers. So it's like, you know, this historically feminine thing shoved in the mouth, but also it's like there's pain because they've got like thorns in there. And so, you know, you and your wife and I were speaking a couple of days ago about the paintings when we were looking at them and how they're based a lot on, you know, what it's like right now in society, and especially living in North America, like how with the Trump administration and everything going on, it's like women are, it feels like we're just regressing so fast, and so many rights are being taken away and everything. And then your wife and I were discussing about, you know, even on social media, this big new trend of like trad wives, like traditional wives, and, you know, how it's become such a huge thing. You see it on TikTok and Instagram, and these wives are almost regressing to like the 1920s. And so when I was making these paintings, I was thinking about all this stuff I'm consuming every day online or like, you know, just in the news every day. And it feels like it's such a strange time in politics and in, you know, gender politics as well. So I wanted to, yeah, really focus on the feeling of like women kind of being shoved, like shut.
But they are imaginary figures, right?
Yeah. None of them are anyone literal.
Yeah. And this comes to you spontaneously, or is it also something which is informed by art history?
Definitely. Like, I mean, I think that any artist making work today or ever, you know, you accumulate like all the art you've ever seen, or even like, you know, things walking down the street, like I'll see tons of stuff that, you know, kind of all comes together in your brain. It's just like this big mush of ideas and thoughts, you know, something I saw 10 years ago, or like a famous Picasso painting that I, you know, always remember, or like a current artist that I love that I follow on Instagram, or a color palette that I saw in a restaurant, you know, so all this stuff comes together. And then when I sit down to figure out a show or start things, I usually will just like sketch out a rough face. And it's just sort of like the face that appears. Like it's not supposed to be anyone literal, but it's like a new face appears every time. And yeah, I think that, you know, there's lots of references in art history to my paintings, and I use a lot of, you know, like flat planes of color field. Like a lot of the faces I painted as like a flat color first, like the whole canvas. And then I do more like expressive gestures. Like once that flat plane is dried, I'll do more expressive mark making in like the eyes and like, you know, really thick paint or brush strokes or like fast moving expressionist brush strokes to sort of like juxtapose the flatness of the work so mm-hmm. that it's, you know, yeah. And so there's so many artists that I look at work over the years that I'm sure that has been influenced by just, but yeah, I think it's, you create your own language based on things that you've seen and liked and digested.
Mm-hmm. And the women which are sort of falling, floating, either fall over a sphere or try to catch a sphere. What's the story there?
Yeah. There's like four or five really big, like anchoring paintings in the show. And they're all women naked, and I wanted to create the bodies almost like statuesque. Like they are all kind of neutral tones of like beige, gray, white, because they're almost supposed to, yeah, look like marble statues in a way. So it's like they're very fragile. But the people or the women in it, you know, there's that one painting, it's called Slip and Slide, and it's, she's, you know, on a black sphere, like a ball under her foot, and she's trying not to like teeter backwards. She's in a position where her arms are out and it looks like she's about to fall back. And you know, the other works, a lot of them, their heads are tilted or they're upside down juggling spheres and stuff. And it's supposed to sort of just, the idea is that the world right now, you feel like, I think it just feels for me that the world is like at such a strange place. Like I feel like it's so dystopian and we're just like all trying to gather our breath and not like fall over. Like it feels like you're teetering at all times, just the way like you can't get away from like crazy news and the media and everything. And so I think I wanted to create these figures where it's like they're just trying to like not slip and fall. Like they're rolling back on balls and they're trying to catch up to kind of create that feeling of like unease and like a topsy-turvy world.
And so the sphere, where is this coming from then? Like, how did you come over?
I just wanted, honestly, like I just wanted a simple, I like to, in all my paintings, like I want to have the environments, not any specific time frame. Like these paintings could be of people mm-hmm. from, you know, 300 years ago, or they could be
from the future
today or the future. Yeah. Like, so I don't like to put any like identifying iconography in there. I want it to just to be like simple sort of thing. So a lot of the time, you know, I want to use something like, yeah, a sphere or a ball. Like it's just, it doesn't matter what really she's on. It's just that it's like, I just wanted to create something that it's clear that's small enough that you can tell that it would be hard to balance on. And also I wanted it to be like a circular, you know, thing. So it's like she's rolling back on it. But there's no like specific reason I choose a sphere or, you know, when they're juggling, it's just, I think also, it just works in the paintings. And I like with the green ones, I think I like the pop of like black against it, 'cause it really like stands out. 'Cause most of the paintings are like quite saturated in like one color, especially with the green, big green painting. So I try and pick, you know, that like that black ball, when she's falling back, 'cause it draws your eye down to see like, okay, this
what's
is like,
causing it.
Mm. Yeah. And then in another painting, another one of the big green ones, there's a woman sitting on like a stool and she's holding like a bunch of oranges and she's got a bunch dropping off of her lap and they're rolling away. Again, it's like, it's just a simple, it's just shape. Like it, I think of that painting that they're oranges, but it could also be, you know, a sphere, juggling balls, whatever you want it to be. But it, the more important point is like, what's the action of those items. So it's like they're dropping and she is like looking out from the painting with like a very kind of startled stare. Like the face is, it's like, what is she seeing or feeling that she's like no longer paying attention and that now these items are dropping and rolling away.
Mm-hmm. I find quite interesting. It's quite ambivalent. You know, it's not that this sphere is actually a threat or it's not necessarily negative.
No.
Also the one where she's like trying to catch it, like the Nirvana cover of the dollar bill.
Yeah.
You know, like where she's like underwater or
free floating
and trying to catch the sphere, at least in my imagination.
Yeah, I think the spheres aren't, they don't hold any like huge significance in terms of like they're evil or they're good. It's more so they're placeholders to show that the bodies are either dropping them, falling on them, trying to stay up, not like slip and slide off of them. They're juggling, like it, they're showing that they're in states of chaos or they're in worlds where it's feeling like something other is happening. And the faces are supposed to be like the real intense thing. So the viewer is looking at it being like, oh, what did she just see that she's now dropped all these oranges on the ground, isn't paying attention because something has happened type thing. So yeah, they're more so a placeholder to create that narrative.
Yeah, and how fragile the everything is, no? How quickly things can change,
yeah,
like a little dot can
and
change.
And all those,
it.
Like all the paintings, the big ones in, of the woman that they're sitting in these jungles, it's supposed to also be like, you know, I use a lot of flora and fauna, not just in the show, but in a lot of my work, because I want it to have this sense of like a jungle can both be like lush and beautiful and nature and calm, but it also can be like very oppressing and it feels like, you know, the jungle's closing in around you. And it's so it's like the pressure of the world like coming around. So it's sort of like how you want to take the painting. Like, but I think also because the overarching idea of this show was sort of, you know, from my perspective, I was painting it as just a woman. And that's why all the paintings are women in the show. I was just painting it thinking about like how strange it feels to be alive today. And so I wanted them all to be sitting naked. That's why they're all naked or nude or whatever word you want to use. But because I wanted them in states of vulnerability, mm-hmm. and then also to be placed in a very vulnerable place, which is like outside in nature, surrounded by these trees and bushes and everything. So it feels almost like that's how it feels to be alive today, because you feel like almost you're sitting exposed, like
but
waiting.
Like
yeah. So you're like, yeah. And I mean, there's like references if we're talking also like back to historical times, like, you know, there's historically been so many paintings over the years of, you know, Adam and Eve. And it's like a lot of things in this, it's like, they're all naked. There's fruit, there's, you know, jungle or forest around them. So there's like references to biblical references and,
so the snake hides as a sphere.
Maybe. I do put a lot of snakes in work. They didn't come into this show, but yeah, I know you want the sphere to be evil, but...
No, not at all. No, I think that's so interesting that the sphere is not, you know, it's like, it's sort of abstract, as you say, chaos. It's interesting that Goethe did this sphere. No, I think it's interesting that the sphere is, it's ambivalent and present, because in the one painting, it seems that she's catching it or is like going after it. What came to my thoughts too is... You know, a princess on the herb.
Oh,
you know that
not.
Story? So she's like irritated by the herb, which is under the mattress.
Oh.
And then she piles up mattresses over and
okay,
over.
Okay, I think we have one called The Princess and the Pea.
But yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, there's one male portrait, double male actually.
Yeah, so there's one painting, it's called Siren Call, and it is a painting that, if you don't know the kind of my thought process, it seems really random in the show, but it's the only painting I put in that has two male figures, and they look totally different just in terms of like how I painted them from the women. And I wanted it to be like that. So basically I painted, it's a diptych of two male figures like facing away from each other. One is holding like a bow and arrow about to shoot. And then another one has like a kind of like one of those medieval flutes where they would be like doo, 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 before a battle. And I painted them kind of in like a classical Greek pottery, like a black and white, very graphic, like sharp, angular bodies
on red, right?
Yeah, it's like red, reddish orange background, but it's the only painting also that has that background. All the women are like very round shapes, like soft bodies,
blue, green, blue.
Mm. And then the only male
complementary
are like, it's like this, that's why I call it like Siren Call, because it's like this like bright, like alert, alert. And so that painting is supposed to like open the show as, you know, how it's feeling right now, as it's almost like women are, I was thinking of naming the show actually Target Practice, but it's like they're about to begin battle. And it feels like, just it, from my perspective as a woman, especially like living in North America, which is so closely, you know, Canada is so closely entrenched with US and US politics and culture. I think just it feels every day, like reading everything on the news and, you know, all these rights being taken away from women, it feels sometimes like we're at battle with certain men, like MAGA men, you know, mm-hmm, and these mm-hmm. like Republican. And even in Canada, you know, we just had an election and Mark Carney won, which is good, but it was very close. And the guy who was going to come into power, Poilievre, he, you know, he was kind of considering taking away some rights and he was more Trump minded. And I think it just seems so dystopian to be living right now and watching this all happen. And I know a lot of people are referencing like Handmaid's Tale and all of that. But so I wanted it, the opening painting to be almost this like high alert for the women in the show, being like, they're ready for this battle kind of, you know, and they're coming for us. And so then the rest of the paintings are like women almost like waiting in the forest and all. That's why their faces also are like, you know, quite like stunned or looking left, looking right, like they're maybe aware. They've heard something.
But it's interesting, aren't the sirens the ones which are more strong and more powerful and sort of trick the men? And
Those are sirens, like mermaid sirens, but
yeah.
I titled it Siren Call because I was thinking of literally like a siren on an ambulance, like
I think that's a double meaning. No,
yeah
it's interesting. The show before was also called Siren because she's from the Ukraine, mm-hmm. and she did a piece in reference to the sirens because they live in Kiev under sirens the whole time. Mm-hmm. And she did a mermaid, which is sort of drowning a man or soldier. So you didn't think of like Siren Call for sirens, literally the Greek sirens.
No, I mean,
subconsciously maybe.
Yeah, subconsciously maybe. I mean, I because it was like the painting, I did it like so saturated, this like almost alarming orangey red color and this like announcement, especially with like the guy with the horn. My thought was like, what's like a big loud sign or symbol? Like, and I just was thinking, you know, the sound of a siren or an alarm going off. And so I just thought, oh, siren call, like we're calling out, like this is about to begin type thing. But yeah, there's also the double meaning of,
he probably doesn't know who is he getting to deal with.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think it's like soft girls.
Yeah.
And then they are like, because it's funny, he's wearing a military suit too, no? He's like in uniform.
Yeah. I wanted them totally different from the female figures. And so I did really like, sure, it's, they're all, the whole figures are just black and white. And I wanted them to be like patterned and tight and their arms and knees, like they're bending down and they're quite sharp and angular. So yeah, they're in almost like uniform and they're matching and one's got like a hat on. And yeah, I just wanted it to feel like quite different than the other ones.
No, but that's, I think, is the answer also to this question. If there's a naked is more fragile and more vulnerability than the, I don't know, safe chosen sitting for a portrait, because they are not, you paint them all from imagination. You don't have someone sitting for you, right?
No, I never do anyone sitting for me. I'll get like reference photos, just for ideas of body shapes. Like a lot of the time I'll Google like ballerinas or gymnasts. Like I like to do a lot of sort of like contorted shapes, like the woman who, it's like the one with the brown background and mm-hmm. it's the juggler. I think I Googled for that. I Googled like circus, like someone in a circus. So I'll get general ideas because I want to see how the body's actually folding. But no one's sitting, no one's arching back from you mm-hmm, juggling.
Mm-hmm. So your history degree, then you found back into painting. When did you think you found your language, mm-hmm. your visual language?
I feel like there, up until honestly, like 5 years ago, there I was like, I always like stayed within the same, like you would never look at a painting that I made 10 years ago and be like, oh, I can't believe that's her work. Like it doesn't look like that crazy different.
Was always like this.
No, like it you wouldn't look back and say, I can't identify that. You would still be like, oh, I can see that that's her work. Like mm-hmm. it was still similar color palettes and brushwork and figurative. But I think for a long time, I was playing around being, you know, I was trying sometimes to do the figures more literally and really like work up skin tone and face and facial expressions and stuff. And then I kind of only like really in the last 5 years, I really feel like I've developed where I actually really like, which is more of like, I do like to have the figures, the bodies and everything, like, you know, anatomically usually correct, but I like the facial expressions and stuff to be kind of wonky. Like they're not, you know, a lot of the eyes are kind of sideways or the mouth and the nose are lopsided. So I kind of like that juxtaposition to be like, okay, I can visually identify that this is a person standing, you know, dropping some oranges, but the face kind of like offsets it, so it's not so literal. So the face is kind of more abstracted.
That's what I meant, you know, when we were speaking about it, that I thought that there's almost like a different approach to it.
Yeah, so the bodies are quite, you know, like classically painted in a way, but then I like that the face, I want the paintings, that when you look at, there's something jarring about it. Like, oh, like this person has the most intense stare, but it's also usually quite simple how I do it. Like it's just a line and a dot for an eye. I'm not trying to make it, you know, like I just paint it like simply, like the mouth can sometimes just be a squiggle. Like they're not like super high realism.
And you think they could be mixed up with your mother's paintings?
No, like her work is different. My mom is going to be like, wow, this whole podcast dedicated to me. I'm like, God.
There's no couch here.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh God, hello. Hello, Virginia. But no, her paintings are definitely like their own body of work, but
figurative too.
Yeah.
Yeah. You created a bunch of paintings, and then how did you learn about this art fair?
Well, it was so funny. After university, I'd moved back in with my mom. My God, this podcast, here she comes again. And she had given me, put a magazine on my bed, and it was like Art in Canada or something. And I opened the magazine and there was an article for this art fair. And my mom was like, did you see the article? You should apply. And I looked and the art fair was like 3 weeks out. And so I was like, oh, like it seems like really close, but let me try. And so I emailed them. And they were like, we actually usually accept people a year in advance. Like, you know, this opens in 3 weeks, but we just had someone drop out. So do you have enough work like to show it? Because I sent them my portfolio and they're like, we do like your work. Like, we'll accept you into the fair, but like, do you have enough? And I had literally no paintings and I just lied. I said, yes, I do. And so I kicked my mom out of her studio and I made like 13 paintings in 3 weeks. And I just like got it together and did it in time.
And you had to pay for it?
Yeah, it was like, I think you paid like $800 for a booth.
And there's no criteria. You can be self-taught. You don't need to go to, you don't have to be.
No, you just had to send your work in. And okay. Like there was a committee of curators, like people who worked at galleries. Like there was a whole committee of people who reviewed it. So it wasn't like anyone could just go. But
How many artists?
I mean, it was like a huge, it's like a proper art fair. Like when you go to, you know, Art Toronto or Art. So tons of booths. I don't know how.
Like 50, 60 booths.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then you were standing there yourself in your booth.
Yeah, I was standing there and the doors opened. And the first person that came in and bought one of my paintings, she actually was working at this gallery in Toronto. It was a really good gallery called the Angel Gallery.
And tell me, how was it to be like I mean, not really necessarily defending, but to stand next to your paintings, communicate them.
Well, I mean, I'd never done anything like this. So I think I was having an internal panic attack. I was like, uh-oh, what the fuck did I just sign myself up for?
Yeah.
And it was so, like, it's so awkward just to stand there in your booth being like, hello, here's my work.
Why is that awkward?
Well, because A, I just never had shown my work. So I think I felt so uncomfortable. You have all these people walk in and they don't say anything to you. So you feel just like this inherent judgment. I think it's just like initially you just feel like, oh, maybe they hate it. Like I can't believe I've just put my, you're putting yourself out there, you know?
But you think they know that you're the artist?
Yeah, they know because they know. It's like an art fair where it's like, because it's not a gallery, it's like each individual artist, because it's like the graduating like art students and everything. It's all the artists who are there.
Okay, it's a condition. You have to be there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was a really long weekend, but I think the doors had opened and within 15 minutes, yeah, this woman who worked at this art gallery in Toronto that was like a very well-known gallery and represented very good artists, she walked in and was like, who are you? And I was like, oh, I'm Erin. And I just told her like how I had just come to be at the show and everything. And she was like, oh, well, I'd like to buy one of the paintings. And I honestly couldn't believe someone wanted to buy one of my paintings.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a painting that was like 48 by 36 inches, I think I had it marked as like $800. And I thought that that was like, I was like, oh my God, am I ripping people off here? Like, I thought that that was so much. And she bought it. And I was like, are you sure you want to give me this money? I couldn't believe it. And she was like, yeah. And then by the end of the weekend, I had sold out the whole booth. And I was like, I've never had this much money in my life, even though I was selling the paintings for, you know, very cheap. And so, yeah. So after that, like lots of, you know, like my art career hasn't just been like, oh, I had one great weekend and then it's all been amazing. Like I, you know, started showing, I had a show in Scotland and then one in New York in Soho and then one in Australia. Like people are just kind of finding me, I guess, through my Instagram and online and seeing like more exhibitions coming up. So there was definitely momentum, but then, you know, I was still so young and the paintings were still, you know, not priced like crazy high. And I was like, can I really sustain myself this whole time? As an artist. So as a backup, I decided to go back to school to do like 1 year intensive program, in graphic design. Cause I mm-hmm. thought, you know, if I can't fully become an artist, then maybe, I could be an art director, because when I worked at the fashion magazine, the mm-hmm. one job I actually did really like was, this woman I worked with, and we did more like stuff on set where she was like doing cool art direction and photography and stuff. And I thought that of all the jobs, that is something I think I would like to do. So I was having a studio and going to school in the day for graphic design. And then after school ended, I would take the subway down and go to my studio at night. So I was painting mm-hmm. at night. And I was still posting on my Instagram, but I kind of was like, you know, there was a bit of a lull in galleries reaching out. And I was like, you know what, maybe that was just like a really weird, successful year. And that was it. And I'll just call it a day. And then the day that I graduated from graphic design school, my friend and I, Michelle, we had planned a trip to Alaska. We were going on a road trip. And as I was boarding the flight, I got an email from a gallery in Toronto that now I've been with for quite a while. And
what's the name?
Bougie Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent me an email and said, like, why don't you come in and talk to us like when you're back from your trip? I think they've been like watching my work this whole time. That's why so much stuff has happened over the years where I'm like about to give up and someone will just message me being like, oh yeah, I've been watching your career for a long time. Like I just, you know, had you on a post-it note in my office for when the right project came up. And I've been like, oh my God. So I did this road trip through Alaska being like, oh my God, like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I got back and then I signed with them and they like immediately started selling my work and I never had to work a day as a graphic designer. And it was so weird because
you really made a contract.
Yeah. Like yeah. I signed a contract with them,
on like country representation, Canada.
They have a gallery in Toronto and then one in Vancouver. So they represent me there.
Uh-huh.
And then I signed with a gallery also in Montreal called Duran Michelle Gallery. Because of that, I was able to like fully start working as an artist because they just started selling my work so quickly. And it felt like crazy that it's so serendipitous that the day I finished school, I got that message. And I think it was on like my fourth birthday or something that I think I actually signed the contract, and it all felt like, wow, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And yeah. And then, I mean, there's been tons of up and down since then, but I have worked like full time just painting, since then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's interesting that it seems to play a big role how the outside, reacts, but I guess it's to all of us. I remember also when I did the gallery was already over when I did this Jeppe Heinz sphere, and then this was the one nobody thought it's realistic. Even my father, also my uncle, they said it's too expensive, you can't do it. And then I ordered it anyway, yeah, without even having the money to pay for the production. You know, by Jeppe Heinz, yeah, the like a running sphere. And then I sold all of it, which was essential because then I had money to pay the fabricator and also to pay debt.
Yeah.
But one thing was to finally make some money, but the other was also to get like outside confidence.
Yeah.
But then looking back, always it's interesting to why we need that reconfirmation from, you know, this woman in the college consultancy had such an important say about your decisions, but she didn't know you, you didn't know her. You know, it's sometimes interesting why outside judgment is so important for us.
Oh, it's, yeah. I mean, and there's been so many instances in my career, like, I mean, you know, working in the art world, I meet tons of really amazing, nice people for the most part, but obviously there's also been like some really horrible people. And
they tell you things without even you ask them.
I mean, people, and you know what, like the thing is, you do have to have thick skin to be in the art world, because you know, you sign up, art is subjective. So some people just do decide that they're going to tell you, you know, what they think or whatever. Yeah. And it's, for the most part, like I've had really great feedback from people. I mean, I'm sure there's people talking shit behind my back like anyone else, but for the most part, people are really nice. But, you know, I've had to deal with certain galleries or collectors that have been really difficult. And, you know, there are certain things that it can get under your skin and you can have doubts. And I always, like, even, you know, the show is opening tonight, and when people have told me, like, I just saw the work go up online, like, this is such a strong show, like, congratulations, I still have imposter syndrome. Like, even the day of the opening, even if people are giving me good feedback, I'll be like, oh, really? Like, you know, it's almost like, because you make this body of work, and also I'm alone in my studio for like 8 months, like, you know, you're so isolated and so alone as an artist that when a show finally opens and people are really digesting the work, it's like almost like this influx of all of a sudden you've been alone for a million years, and then you're like, you know, talking on podcasts, meeting new people, like collectors want to buy this, or anyways, and then there's an opening and you just feel like, whoa, it's, you know, it's so different. It's such a different feeling from the life you live in those isolated 8 months or more while working on the show. So you can feel sensitive, like, you know, do people like this, or, you know, what are people thinking? But at the end of the day, I think when I was younger, I feel like maybe I had more sensitivity to it, but I think I'm like, you know what, I do feel good about this body of work, and like, I did my best and it's out there now, and, you know, people have the right to.
Yeah, I think imposter syndrome, you only can sort of face it while looking at your own work and sort of try to objectify critically, did I achieve something there or not?
Yeah.
And I think that only yourself can sort of give you the grades, you know, mm-hmm, because how many compliments you get from the outside, it will never feed the insecurity of imposter. I had that too. I always thought, someday they're going to come and find me, you know, and say like, okay, it's over now.
I know.
You can stop pretending to be an art dealer.
I think that's the thing. Like, I think it's so crazy because you kind of like, you know, I was thinking when I was on the plane flying here, I was like, you just sometimes have these weird moments where you're like, I'm being flown to come do the show in Germany, and this is like amazing. It doesn't feel like I deserve this.
Yeah.
And myself at 21 would be like shaken to death if they found out this is what I was doing. But, you know, you just like continue to live life and you get to be an adult and you're like, oh, when you're younger, you thought adults knew what was up and they really had it figured out. And then you become an adult and you're like, I still don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm just figuring it out. And one day someone's going to come and say, you know, you can't be an artist anymore and you have to go get a real 9-to-5 job and you're screwed.
Acting is over.
Yeah. I'm still always being like waiting for that shoe to drop. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I think also like keeping that feeling of alive is so important because like you don't want to get to a place where you're like, I'm amazing and you get really arrogant and you think you just are, you know, sensational, because then you kind of need that edge to always be like, I don't know, keep you going or feeling like you want to continue to grow and achieve. Like, I want to continue to grow my practice and, you know, hopefully I will be in a different place by the time I'm, you know, 10 years from now in my 40s or something. So I think it's good to have that anxiety.
And do you work then in groups? Like, is this like one theme and then that's over and then there comes a new one?
Well, for solo shows, like I always try and make sure that they're, you know, they're a standalone show, so that they aren't just a continuation of like never ending paintings that are the same. So I do try and make them unique in the way that it's like, oh, that was that show that Aaron had in Germany. And it's like identifiable.
Because these two topics with a face and the flowers and the sphere, that's new, right?
Well, I've done paintings before where people are kind of like toppling over, or I've done a lot of paintings where there's been a figure sitting and they're sitting in like an interior, like inside a house or something. And they have a flower vase that's cracked and leaking water, or the flower vase is tipping over. So I've done like iterations of these ideas. But I think, yeah, I think the basic overall idea that I have for the show, you know, it's more of a, falls under an umbrella of common themes that like I'll always be interested in. And that, and so, yeah, each show is a bit different, but it never will be like so different that it's like straying crazy far away. But yeah, I just think honestly, I always feel like it's so strange to be alive. The feeling of being alive and the experience of living every day and just going about our daily lives, and also like the chaos that ensues in this world. I think it's sort of this overarching idea that I'm trying to kind of create these worlds in the painting where the figures are just a bit like dizzying and disoriented and looking at you, because it's like, that's how I feel. It feels to be alive. It feels very strange sometimes. And so that's kind of like a big overarching theme I try to capture in all the works. So you kind of can like feel that in most of the shows.
Absolutely. Aaron, thank you so much to take us on this journey.
Thank you.
And yeah, thanks for the beautiful show. And I'm sure it will be a nice opening.
Yes, can't wait for tonight.
Was mit Kunst? Ein Podcast von und mit Johann König.